Chief Justice, members of the court, good afternoon. On behalf of Mr. Malik and myself, again, it's our pleasure to introduce Billy Nullis from Philadelphia. Thank you.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I seem to be the only fellow in here without a white shirt, and I just want to tell you we've been at it for a while, and this was the last shirt I had left hanging in my office. So let me open with that comment. What I'd like to do this morning, if it's acceptable to the court, is talk to a few minutes about the difficulty, the dilemma in Delaware law with respect to the Superior Court's authority to issue a stay of execution in a circumstance such as Mr. Jackson's. I'd like to devote the bulk of the presentation, however, to why we believe that this court should grant the stay of execution pending the United States Supreme Court certiorari review, and then if time permits at the end, maybe talk a little bit about the APA. So let me just put the dilemma before the court. As Your Honors know, Rule 35E directly orders petitioners to file an application for a stay of execution in circumstances such as this in the Superior Court. The rule directly says in any proceeding, including post-conviction proceedings, the Superior Court is the court where a stay application shall be initially made, and the decision shall be reviewable by the Delaware Supreme Court. Rule 61L7 indicates that the Superior Court is without authority to issue a stay of execution in these circumstances, and that's what the Superior Court actually held in this case. Judge Cooch did not say that a stay of execution pending certiorari review was inappropriate. He said he believed he was without authority to issue such a stay. And we've made arguments, I won't belabor the point, that the execution date was set pursuant to Directive 131, not pursuant to Rule 61L6, that Rule 61 in these circumstances is not a stay pending federal certiorari review. In other words, we're not requesting a stay pending certiorari review from the Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit. We're requesting a stay pending certiorari review of a decision of this court. But the reality of it is, aside from those technical arguments, there is a contradiction in the rule. And it's a contradiction that this court held it did not need to address in the Steckel case, because the court jumped to the ultimate decision of whether a stay pending certiorari is appropriate. Our position is, and we respectfully submit, that the court should address this in Mr. Jackson's case because it's going to arise again. There are 19 petitioners on death row in Delaware. The rules require a proceeding in the Superior Court. The defendants file, lawyers work on that proceeding, both sides go and debate a matter, and at the end of the day, you have a proceeding, decedent's family members are there, and at the end of the day, you have a proceeding where the Superior Court cannot grant relief. So it's a pointless loop. So either
that let's assume that you're correct, and we ought to sort this out. And let me say before I ask the question, I think everyone on your side and everyone on the state side is to be commended for the quality and quantity of the work that you filed in so many courts in a short amount of time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
But if we assume that our court could enter a stay, the purpose of the stay would be to let the United States Supreme Court review this petition for certiorari. You now filed the petition, the state's answered, you filed your reply, and we know that it's all before the United States Supreme Court. They know the seriousness of your contentions. Why shouldn't they be the ones to stay it if they think they need more time? Why should we enter the stay because we think they may need more time?
That's the ultimate stay pending cert question. But I bring up the contradiction in the rule at the beginning because that's a matter of Delaware law.
No, I agree. And my whole question was predicated on the fact that assume you're correct and assume we need to sort it out. But the immediate question is, does our court have authority to enter a stay anyway under the Constitution? I think everyone agrees we could if we should. My question is, if everything is before the United States Supreme Court, why should this court enter a stay so they can think about it when they have the same ability to say, we need more time to think about it?
Sure. And let me turn to that. However, they will not resolve the rule issue for you. So that's, we think, a legitimate basis upon which this court can issue a stay. However, Justice Holland, your question is the key question in this case. So let me turn to that. Our view is that the question in Mr. there's a Your Honors, from Barefoot created a four-part test in Steckel as to the authority to issue a stay of execution pending certiorari review. The United States Supreme Court expects the lower courts to determine stays pending certiorari before they themselves have to make that determination. I've practiced in Florida. They expected the Florida Supreme Court to do it. I've practiced in Georgia. They expected the Georgia Supreme Court to do it. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court has issued at least a couple of dozen of stays pending certiorari review over the last decade in the for the U.S. Supreme Court to review cases. It's not unusual nationally for the United States Supreme Court to expect the lower courts, Your Honors being the highest court in Delaware, but a lower court compared to the United States Supreme Court.
Under the federal constitution, nevertheless the sovereign.
To first make a determination as to whether a stay pending certiorari review is appropriate. And the test in that regard is that four-part test. Irreparable injury, clearly, Mr. Jackson will have an irreparable injury. Public interest, there is a public interest in having judicious consideration. So the ultimate question, Justice Holland, boils down to whether there is a colorable, debatable issue in Mr. Jackson's case, whether there's a possibility that four justices...
Excuse me for interrupting. I need some clarification of your response to Justice Holland's question. You would agree that the United States Supreme Court, if it so desires, can stay the execution?
Yes, sir.
On the basis that it needs more time to consider your petition for certiorari?
Yes, sir.
But are you also telling us that it is the practice and expectation of the United States Supreme Court that those decisions will initially be made by the state courts?
Yes.
And based on what authority?
Based on just practice nationally, is that first state courts, state Supreme Courts, determine the issue of whether an application for a stay pending cert is appropriate. And you know it's significant because there isn't any case where a state Supreme Court has issued a stay of execution pending the United States Supreme Court's review and where the United States Supreme Court has overturned that decision. So the real
what
issue...
What about the other way around? Have there been instances where a state Supreme Court has failed to issue a stay pending certiorari consideration, and the United States Supreme Court throwing its hands up in the air and saying there's nothing we can do about it?
No. There have been instances where a state Supreme Court has denied a stay pending certiorari review, and then the United States Supreme Court has granted that stay. The Supreme Court has the authority to...
So if we weren't to grant a stay, as you suggested, it wouldn't be an insurmountable burden for the United States Supreme Court to issue a stay of their own?
It would not be insurmountable, no. However, think of what Your Honors would be doing. The question before the court under your own law, Steckel, and under the United States Supreme Court's law, Barefoot, is whether there is a debatable, colorable, substantial issue in a case to be presented on certiorari. We're in the summer session right now. We have filed, as Justice Holland, as you indicated, we filed our petition. The state of Delaware has filed its response. The reply has been filed in the Supreme Court. So a stay of execution by this court would not be something as an aid to the parties. Ironically, Mr. Jackson would have had until September 15th for us to file the certiorari petition, and that time has been truncated. What you would be doing is giving the United States Supreme Court an opportunity to review Mr. Jackson's case in the normal untruncated certiorari process, which means they would review the case the first Monday in October. They would have a conference.
Well, they can still do that. Basically, the state decision is a single U.S. Supreme Court justice decision, isn't it?
No, Your Honor. The state decision goes to the circuit justice, in this case, Justice Alito, and by practice, it then gets referred to the full court. And ironically, four votes are necessary for certiorari, five votes are necessary for a stay of execution.
Well, so what happens? As you know, there's a protocol that's in place in capital cases. Five courts can stop an execution, and all five courts stay in communication when we're at this stage of the proceeding. And in fact, the clerk of the United States Supreme Court has already been in contact with the clerk of our court after all of your filings. So the clerk of the United States Supreme Court is aware of the date and aware of all of the filings.
Sure. Sure. My argument is not that the Supreme Court is somehow going to drop the ball and forget about Mr. Jackson's case. My argument is, essentially, let me put it this way. Your Honors took 2 years to decide this case. You had three oral arguments, two en banc oral arguments. You had a remand to the Superior Court. You had multiple briefing. As much as I respectfully disagree with Your Honor's ultimate conclusion, you gave it deliberative, careful thought before you ultimately issued your opinion. Because of the expedited schedule created by the execution date in this case, remember, Mr. Jackson would have had until September 15th to file his certiorari petition. The state would have had 60 days thereafter, and the case would have been normally conferenced in the October term. Now you are putting the justices of the United States Supreme Court, not you, Your Honors, but this situation is putting the justices of the United States Supreme Court of trying to determine what are clearly debatable issues in Mr. Jackson's case in 2-3 days on the fly at a conference that has not yet occurred, because that will occur under their normal process after Your Honors rule on the stay pending cert of execution. If you took such careful, deliberate time to make a decision on the issues in this case, our suggestion most respectfully to you is it's not for Mr. Jackson at this point, it's not for the Attorney General's office, it's for the Supreme Court to give them an opportunity to process this case and to make the normal, deliberative decision that they would make in a case of this magnitude. It is a capital case that you've read the certiorari petition, you've read the response, you've read the reply, you've read all of the briefs we have filed over the last couple of years. I cannot imagine that any reasonable jurist would look at this case and say there's not a debatable issue here for the United States Supreme Court. There absolutely are debatable issues here for the United States Supreme Court. And to put those justices in the position of having to make the determination on these debatable issues on the fly, overnight, in a matter of days, strikes me as something that's quite inappropriate. This isn't the matter of a frivolous issue or a procedurally barred issue or an issue that has been decided 5 times in the past and a petitioner is just throwing up a prayer at the last minute. These are real, substantive, debatable questions under Gardner and under the Sixth Amendment in areas where the Supreme Court at least should have an opportunity to rule on whether the opinion of this court
is... So your argument is not that the U.S. Supreme Court will drop the ball, but that the U.S. Supreme Court may not be able to apprehend over a 2 or 3 day period that the issues are as serious as you understand them to be.
They cannot, in that truncated period, give this case anything even close to the deliberative care that this court gave it. They can't. It's not possible. So all we're asking is that you give the United States Supreme Court an opportunity until the October term, we're not talking a long period of time, to make its normal determination on whether certiorari review should be granted or not. It is not an extraordinary request. As I said, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court has granted stays of execution pending certiorari over the last 10 years. Other state courts do. And it's simply to give that court an opportunity to decide the issues in this case. And the issues in this case are, needless to say, are substantial. Your Honor's clerks, Your Honor's, our friends from the Attorney General's office, Mr. Malik, Mr. Foley, myself, we've searched far and wide to find a case like Mr. Jackson's. There isn't one like Mr. Jackson's. There isn't the case that Your Honors have found. You would have cited it in the opinion where a defense lawyer tells the presiding judge that his client is guilty and loathsome and repulsive and ought to be executed. There's not a case like that. If nothing else, the Supreme Court should have an opportunity to consider the certiorari petition in this case in an untruncated manner. Under the established law of the Supreme Court, you have the authority to give them the opportunity to look at that in what really is an extraordinary case. And, you know, I'm dying to get back to the merits, but I won't, because Your Honors have made the decision on the merits. What we're saying to you today is, no reasonable jurist can look at this case, look at the court's opinion, look at what the issue is, and say, this is frivolous, this is not debatable, this is unworthy of the Supreme Court's examination. It certainly is.
What was the argument to the district court this morning about that court's ability or propriety of entering a stay?
That argument dealt with the lethal injection litigation in this case. It was technically it's a federal rule of civil procedure 60B motion to reopen the federal proceedings as to the legality of the new drug that the state is going to be using in executions and specifically intends to use for Mr. Jackson's execution, there's no overlap with the issue before Your Honors. The issue before Your Honors was here over the last 2 years that we've been debating.
I understand there's no substantive overlap about the issues, but did you get any indication from that court about when or if it might issue a stay?
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
No, Your Honor. And the two matters are independent of each other. And just as it is worth repeating, as a practical matter, you're not entering, our request is not that you enter a stay of execution and the case then goes away somewhere and nobody hears about it for years. We're asking you to give us till the October term, to give the Supreme Court, I shouldn't even say us because we filed and the state has filed, to give the Supreme Court until the October term to look at these issues when they're back together in Washington in a deliberative form. Your Honors may know the normal process of the Supreme Court is they schedule a conference date. And at that conference date, the justices get together with their clerks. Prior to that, each individual justice writes a memo that is used in that conference process. They sit down. They look at the case with care. They kick it around. Nobody goes into that room except the justices themselves. That's not going to happen for Mr. Jackson. As it stands right now, the review that Mr. Jackson is getting at the United States Supreme Court, again, not through anyone's fault in this court, but because of the nature of the execution date, the review that Mr. Jackson is getting is there are emails that are flying back and forth, and there may be some brief communication back and forth. That's not the deliberative process that the issue in this case deserves. It simply is not. And therefore, all that we're asking is that you allow this case to go on that regular deliberative process that the Supreme Court will undertake. One simple point in that regard, as to the Sixth Amendment issue, as to the issue concerning Mr. Hurley's violation of the duty of loyalty, the state's main argument at the Supreme Court is somehow that this issue was not properly presented to Your Honors. And when I saw that, I was stunned. I mean, I remember standing here three times now arguing about Mr. Hurley's violation of the duty of loyalty. I remember we submitted to Your Honor's briefs with a heading concerning Mr. Hurley's violation of the duty of loyalty. And Justice Holland, one of the things to consider is this something that the United States Supreme Court might be interested in? Well, you know, over the last 8 years, they've considered Wiggins, Williams, Rompilla, Pinholster, Sears, Porter, Belmontes, Wood, Richter, Van Hook, 10 cases involving Sixth Amendment claims. Some end up going in the petitioner's favor, some end up going against the petitioner. None of those, not one, had lawyering that was at this level. Not one had this kind of record. And if this is not worthy of the Supreme Court's review, if Your Honors really think that this is not a case worthy of the Supreme Court's review, I dare say nothing that myself or Mr. Malik or Mr. Foley could say will ever convince you otherwise. So as to the Supreme Court review, the question is there something debatable here? There's a lot that's debatable here. And all we are asking is that Your Honors grant a stay pending certiorari review. That's all it is, pending certiorari review so that the Supreme Court may consider the matter. As to the APA, let me, since Your Honors consolidated the appeals, let me just say, just to really simply, the last time you considered the Administrative Procedures Act appeal, the Department of Corrections had made public the execution protocol, including the drug that was going to be used. That was not discovered until the case came before this court on appeal, and you ruled that that issue would not be entertained at that time because it had not been presented to the Superior Court. We are now back addressing that issue because there's a new disclosure by the Department of Corrections. The commissioner has indicated what the drug is going to be in the new execution protocol. And the issue now is squarely before this court as to whether the voluntary disclosure by an agency trumps the confidentiality requirement of the Administrative Procedures Act. Your Honor should address that. That's an independent basis for a stay of execution other than the most important one, which is the certiorari proceedings in the U.S. Supreme Court. And I should say that there is, under the statutory framework, an exemption that indicates that when an agency voluntarily discloses something, that agency can't turn around and then claim confidentiality. The Superior Court ruled that the agency is still protected by the confidentiality provision. That just doesn't make sense. And if you look at the Shell Oil case that was authored by, at the time, Superior Court Judge Roth, who eventually was on the Third Circuit, very clearly holds that when an agency discloses something, that thing can no longer be called confidential.
When you say something, did the Superior Court make a finding on whether or not that information disclosed constituted a regulation or part of the regulatory process?
Yes, the Superior Court did not rule on that aspect, and that is a defense that the Attorney General is raising in as an alternative argument here before Your Honors.
And isn't that important before you get to waiver of confidentiality?
Sure. That's an issue that this Court needs to decide. And we've briefed that issue, and the parties have engaged on that issue. If you look at the disclosure itself, plainly it's a policy and a procedure under Section 10,102. It's labeled a policy and procedure. And so what you have is something that we have submitted plainly as a policy and procedure. But, Mr. Chief Justice, the Superior Court did not address that issue because it held that confidentiality still protects. So we respectfully submit you deal with the confidentiality issue, and then if we prevail on that, look at the party's arguments on the alternative argument that the state has raised. Unless Your Honors have some questions, I'll reserve whatever's left of my time. I thank Your Honors for the consideration today and over the past arguments that we've had on this issue.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Good afternoon, and may it please the Court. Paul Wallace on behalf of the respondent, Commissioner Danberg. One of the things that Mr. Nolan left out in his recitation of where this case stands is the fact that there is also a stay application before the United States Supreme Court. It was filed this morning by Mr. Jackson and responded to this afternoon, actually before this proceeding began. So where we are is in basically the Flamer-type situation, and that is nobody disputes that this court has the discretion to grant a stay pending certiorari review, but the question is whether it should. And the state suggests respectfully that while Mr. Jackson certainly feels that this court should give the United States Supreme Court a hand, it's a hand they do not need. They certainly know, and that court certainly can determine on its own whether or not a stay is applicable, and they use the same standard that this court does, and that is whether or not, for instance, there's a reasonable probability that four justices will grant cert. The second is there a significant possibility the decision of this court would be reversed? And the court certainly could look at that, but might have a bit of a skewed view. Being as the court did engage in the full analysis that Mr. Nolas spoke to and has decided that, in fact, there was no Sixth Amendment violation. Not saying that you'll never win on that particular, but probably much more difficult for this court to engage in that view than the court that will have to make the ultimate decision itself as to whether or not they need the time.
Well, then, on that basis, let's ask the question a different way. Given the time and the effort and the significance that this court and the entire Delaware judicial system has spent on this case, all at least designed in our minds to get the right result for the right reason, shouldn't the question be, why shouldn't we grant the stay?
Well, I would suggest because what the court then is trying to do, by the standards that the court set itself in Steckel, is try to prognosticate what, in fact, the United States Supreme Court may do. And when the United States Supreme Court has the same stay application before it right now, those justices can make their own determination as to those very issues. And so I would suggest that
what as an institution, what kind of message do we send to the people we serve if we dismiss the stay application out of hand, unless we're convinced as a matter of law and conscience that it's meritless?
Your Honor, the court's not making a determination that it is, in fact, meritless. What the court is making a determination is that the defendant hasn't proven that, in fact, he has a reasonable probability that the United States Supreme Court will take the matter up, and secondly, that there's a reasonable probability that they will actually reverse the decision of this court. I think that what the court is doing is sending the message that it is confident in its decision, that there is no reasonable likelihood of reversal by the United States Supreme Court. But if there is, certainly the United States Supreme Court can look to that. They have all of the resources that they need. And today, they have fully before them a stay application that says the same thing that's before this court right now. And if, in fact, five justices believe that stay is appropriate, then they will grant it and say, yes, we do believe that there is a necessity. There is some reasonable probability that we would reverse this case. But I suggest respectfully that that's best left to that court to make that decision. What this court is doing is allowing another court to make a decision based on its needs and its perhaps view of whether or not there is a reasonable likelihood, instead of this court trying to put itself in the place of the United States Supreme Court and make a determination that they should take it up or that there's a reasonable likelihood of reversal. In those circumstances, the state respectfully suggests, and I believe that's probably in part the wisdom of L7, that says that basically the Superior Court should not grant stays for the purposes of federal review, that it is better to leave it to the court that actually has it. Right now, three different federal courts have different aspects of Mr. Jackson's matter: the United States Supreme Court, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, and the Delaware District Court. All of them have the ability, if they need to stay this. Part of the problem is this: in the execution circumstance, you will never come to an end. You will never have an opportunity, because I can guarantee you, if this court grants a stay for the purposes of certiorari review, there will be four or five more filings by Mr. Jackson, again asking for a stay for whatever the newest issue is. This is not the end. In fact, it is in part an attempt at delay for delay's sake, at least asking this court, because this court need not try to divine what the United States Supreme Court is going to do. They are fully capable of doing that. We suggest this is much like Flamer, and that they, in fact, that this court withheld its discretion there because it was fully submitted. This case is fully submitted. Their application is before the United States Supreme Court. It has the full ability to grant that relief if they need it, and that may just be a stay application. It may just be a stay to say, yes, we should go on full conference because we have some doubt in our mind or we have some belief that we may reverse the Delaware Supreme Court. We would suggest that it's more appropriate to be held to be done by that court, just like if the Delaware District Court determines that, in fact, whatever is going on in a lethal injection, it meets the standards for a stay, they can do that also. As to the APA matter, we have submitted ours on that. There is the one last question. It is Mr. Jackson's view and Mr. Jackson's view alone that when, in fact, an agency that has is covered by 4322D decides instead that it is going to let the public know its business or specific aspects of its business that it has no need otherwise statutorily to put out there, that in some way that invites them to only promulgate that, right, that protocol using the APA. He never tells us where exactly that link comes from. It doesn't come from the statutes. It doesn't come even from the help he tries to give from other courts, other states, Arkansas, California, Kentucky, Maryland, New Jersey. He points out that all of them had to go through the APA for their lethal injection protocol, but none of them had the statutory mandate of 4322D. None of them specifically exempted their Department of Correction out of it. This court found in the first part of this litigation that, in fact, we had. And I would suggest that the Superior Court was specifically correct in this. It would give a perverse incentive to say, if public agency, you have certain confidentiality to your protocols, but if you put it out there, you are then going to invite public notice and comment, you are going to have to promulgate that only under the APA, what will that public agency do? Probably not invite that. There is not that link that says simply because you have disclosed, that then throws you into the APA. And we suggest that it is almost nonsensical to believe that it would. The state suggests respectfully, for the reasons that it set forward, that the court should not exercise its discretion to grant a stay. They have not met the four factors that this court put forward in Mr. Steckel's case, that there is a reasonable probability that four justices will grant cert, that there is a significant possibility that the decision of this court will be reversed. I would say one more thing. They give short shrift to the harm aspect of this. For two decades, Mrs. Girardi's children have waited for the sentence that was imposed to be carried out. So have her friends. So has society. One of the harms is that, in fact, people lose confidence in the system, and that the state cannot carry out the duty that it has been given. It is a solemn duty, there is no doubt. And the court, and I thank Justice Holland for recognizing the work of everyone on both sides to try to bring to the court's attention, this court and the other courts, all of the issues as best as we possibly can. But there comes a time when it is an end. We suggest, as for the state issues in this case, that time is now. If the federal courts believe that it is not, and that they need some further time to deliberate over the issues that Mr. Jackson and his counsel have raised, they have the absolute ability to do that. But that we should end the state process now.
Mr. Wallace, I understand the reasons you've said what you just said, but I think it makes it incumbent upon me as Chief Justice of this court for us to remind ourselves and the people we serve that among the duties we have are to obey the United States and the Delaware Constitution and the principles that are embodied in those two documents. It's not simply to follow a statutory framework while disregarding constitutional principles. This case and many others take a great deal of time to resolve, largely not on our initiative. But if we ever lose sight of our sworn duty to uphold constitutional principles in a thoughtful and careful way, then we shouldn't be serving in the positions that we serve.
Your Honor, the state's in absolute agreement with that, and this court has. This court has carried out its duty to Mr. Jackson in determining whether or not there are any constitutional issues that infect his conviction and sentence, and found
it is not. I just wanted to make sure that the use of the word duty was considered in its fullest scope.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honors, just very briefly, no one can predict with any certitude whether four justices will vote to grant certiorari in a given case. I cannot predict it with certitude. The state cannot predict against it with certitude. And so the way that courts make that determination is you look at whether the issues in the case are debatable, whether they're debatable among jurists of reason, whether they deserve encouragement to proceed further, and this is language right out of the Barefoot case where the Supreme Court said what a court should look at when considering a stay pending certiorari. The reasonable probability test that four justices will grant certiorari review in a case, remember what a reasonable probability is under Strickland itself, it does not mean a preponderance of the evidence. It does not mean that we have to show that it is more likely than not that the Supreme Court will grant certiorari. A reasonable probability has been defined as whether there is a debatable issue in the case, whether it's something that reasonable jurists can engage on. And certainly, if Mr. Jackson's case is not something that reasonable jurists can engage on, I don't know a case that is. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and adjourn.